You're listening to The Retail Perch with Shekhar Raman and Gary Hawkins.
We're going to discuss industry challenges and opportunities in grocery retail, AI, current and upcoming trends, and so much more. So welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Retail Perch. I'm flying solo today. This is Gary Hawkins. My co-host Shekhar is tied up in a meeting that he couldn't change or get out of today. So you have me. But I would like to welcome our guest today, Shiraz Ritwik from LatentView. Shiraz specializes in analytics, and I know that is a topic that is of great interest to certainly our listeners. So Shiraz, let's just jump right in. If you would, maybe give us some of your background and what brought you to what you do today.
Thanks, Gary, and thanks for having me on the show. I'm really happy to be here. I think a lot of the reason why folks like myself are excited today is because the word AI has gained a new meaning in the last 6 months. And that is really revolutionizing not just retail, not just CPG, but all industries across. And so executives like myself are looking to learn and apply those in very, very real contexts today. What I'm most excited about today is what I've heard over the last week or so at the NVIDIA GPU Technology Conference. I think a lot of what we're seeing is the fundamental shift in computing off the CPU and moving that to the GPU, which is the graphics processing unit, originally designed for gamers to just do a much better first-person shooter games, low latency. But they also figured out that these things could run like amazing number of calculations, floating point operations at the same time, what they call flops. So what they've moved from is in terms of order of processing has moved from teraflops to exaflops, which is, if you look at the sheer change in order of magnitude, it's moved from over the last 8 years or so, the computing power of GPUs has moved from X to 10X. And whereas if you track that from a PC's perspective, it took PCs about, or personal computers, about two decades to traverse that same quantum leap. So things are really improving exponentially, and that is going to have huge implications for the industry today.
Yeah, so interesting you mentioned that. In my latest book, Bionic Retail, I talk about the exponential growth of computer processing power and how that's really come together with similar growth in data, big data, and not just the quantity of data, but the diversity of data that's available today. And then both of those helping power up artificial intelligence that seems to be unlocking new things almost every day. Completely agree with you what's happening here. So when we were talking before we started here today, you mentioned that a good amount of your work is in the CPG industry, and you're also doing some work in financial services. Give us, if you would, some sense of what you see happening in CPG.
Certainly. So CPG is very interesting. If I look at the value chain itself, there are many ways, of course, to describe it. But if you look at the key operations, there's like five key stages, right? Right at the top end of the funnel, you're looking to understand the consumer. And consumer first means you need to develop insights and you need to innovate market-winning products around what the consumer is looking for. The second stage is to be able to forecast the demand for these products and your existing portfolio of brands and products. The third stage is to be able to learn where the consumer will buy. And that is where things like shopper insights factor in. And that is what things like marketing would learn from, to say, okay, can I build out my media mix allocations? Can I drive omnichannel marketing? And in order to do that, we talked before the show about things like retail media networks, which are really, really coming into their own this year. And if you move from there, the fourth phase is really once you've figured out where the consumer will buy, you're looking to ensure that your product is on the shelf over there. So several components of that. That is where a bulk of the supply chain work comes in around understanding where your supplier and DC network is. By DC, I mean distribution center, sorry. So getting a multi-tier supplier visibility, understanding your inventory down to the real time and where you can drive fulfillment from, and therefore ensuring fulfillment. So that is often a multi-criteria decision making framework, because you can optimize fulfillment for highest revenue, lowest cost, a combination of the two, or the shortest path to fulfillment. Yeah. And as you do that, I think the final stage kind of goes back to right at the beginning, where you look at how product is selling, and you then feed that into your understanding of the consumer and your insight. So if I look at this entire cycle, I think a lot of what is happening is CPGs are learning to, or they're experimenting with grappling with more and more data. Almost every CPG company we're talking to today, including the $50 billion companies, as well as newly created $10 to $15 billion entities as well, all of them are saying, well, we have lots of data, we have lots of insights, we just can't connect it all together. So if you take the innovation context again, nearly every large CPG today has subscriptions to Kantar or Circana or to other third-party information yep. providers. They also have sales data and shipments data for their products. They have sources like Mintel Global New Products database to understand how new products are doing. They have insights, they have R&D consumer testing and preference data, and they have a lot of concepts and how those concepts have performed in market tests. How do you join all of those together to understand what kind of soap or skincare lotion or ice cream should you launch? And that is where we figured out that it's often important to parameterize the product into its key attributes. So break it down into the key attributes. And if you can predict each attribute and rank each attribute in terms of what will be the best value for that attribute, then link it all together, then you can actually rank the best product. And that is where some of the top CPGs like Unilever are working with us. We are actually in a partnership with them called Data Lab. And so digital R&D at Unilever has brought us in to work with them on the innovation roadmap. And that is essentially allowing us to be able to bring in a lot of these different data sources that you also mentioned and derive value out of looking at them together. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the key things that is happening with CPG. The other thing that is happening, of course, we all know is from a post-pandemic perspective, all kinds of changes and supply chain disruptions have been thrown at the market. So whether it is the Ukraine war or whether it is the Suez Canal and Panama Canal kind of constraining the volume of products and therefore companies have to choose alternate routes for fulfillment, sometimes even alternate suppliers and countries for fulfillment. It's because, or not even full, sorry, not fulfillment, but sourcing their raw materials.
Yeah.
It is becoming a state of constant disruption that we have to live through. And so the on-shelf availability metric, which had kind of stabilized around 80-85% for many CPGs, is now again going down to about 70-75% is what we believe. So
flexibility is important.
Absolutely. We cannot overstate the power of flexibility at this time.
So I'm curious, and again, thinking of CPG and, you know, brand manufacturers, you know, you've talked quite a bit around supply chain, inventory visibility, you know, channels, et cetera. What about breaking it down further into product attributes? You know, I'm seeing, certainly relative to food products, more and more convergence with healthcare, with health conditions, that type of thing, right? That directly relate back to attributes of a given product. Mm-hmm. Does it have gluten, so on and so forth? Are you seeing anything there? Are you doing any work in that space?
I think individually, we're definitely looking at some companies where we're looking at the food and brands portfolios, especially snacks and beverages. I think it'll definitely be interesting to see what has thrown up. We haven't seen a lot, but in ice creams, for instance, if I look at the UK, there are clear preferences that emerge from the data around what they're seeing on the label of the ice cream itself. So one example is that quite often the labels have ingredients mentioned. We found there was a difference in preference for ice creams with the names of the ingredients versus some of the chemical compositions. And
Okay.
obviously, some of it is intuitive, but then we also found that chemical compositions don't quite resonate with the public. They're not, those products are not seeing as much pickup, as much excitement about the brand, whereas the others are definitely seeing more. But I think
Okay.
overall, what's becoming important in this space is the ability to not only collect, but get all of this data into a clean room, and to be able to process this and run complex machine learning models on top of it in order to drive value. So if I think of most retail and CPG companies today, they run either on the cloud or they have x86 on-prem architecture. And
Yep.
in both these cases, I think the benefit has been, historically code has been kind of abstracted from the underlying hardware. And that has served multiple purposes. You have you're able to scale up and down your compute unit based on how much of Azure you're consuming, or AWS, or the other. You're able to standardize your coding so that it's not as dependent on the specific hardware that you're running, and the code itself doesn't dictate the choice of hardware. However, what's happening now is that these benefits, I think, are also giving up what is soon to happen in terms of being able to tap into the power of being able to process increasing amounts of data. So in a way, you could say that this was done for a previous time when it was when data was still becoming big data, but not necessarily at the same scale and volume.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, Gary, you'd say that, okay, now I have to run the same data science code. Instead of the CPU, I have to run it on the GPU. So if there were libraries available to rewrite my current code into such that we could kind of run it on multiple GPUs, the proposition of that is becoming higher and higher. And the good thing is the hyperscalers are all excited about this. We're seeing them collaborate with the likes of NVIDIA, and I'm sure with AMD also they'll come up.
Yeah.
We are definitely seeing them kind of operate at that level. And there are multiple examples where this can definitely benefit. I'd be happy to go into some of that as well.
No. Okay. So in retail or on the retailer side, many retailers, including some of the largest, continue to have a problem with data discipline, data cleanliness, etc. The other big issue are data silos. And again, I talk more and more about the need to break down those data silos to create more of a unified data foundation, to make all the data that retail has more accessible, and to ease implementation of new AI applications, etc. Do you see the same thing on the brand side, or what do you see happening there?
Yes, we do. In fact, now we see more attention on this problem because, again, manufacturers are realizing that there is a need to connect different data sources together and learn from that and get to the next level of what product will work. And to do that, I think we are seeing that they're looking to pull together different kinds of internal data sources, especially one strong example is if I look at forecasting as a problem because of all the disruptions that we discussed, value of flexibility cannot be overstated. Forecasting requires one to be able to marry together data about the product's past sales versus similar products, adjacent products, look at it in the context of how fulfillment has historically happened, and be able to stitch all of that together for different SKUs at a granular store level, if possible, aisle level, if possible, and then go across multiple geographies, and to be able to ingest all that data and continue to process it, one for training and two for inference. And inference is where you can actually start coming out with recommendations around, you know, here's the forecast for the next 7 days or however you're doing it. So we're definitely seeing a lot of impact in that. For instance, in the toy industry, there's a whole lot of influence, a whole lot of impact in terms of being able to bring some newer approaches, some retail data into the context. And we're familiar with retail media networks, and that does apply upstream, as we had alluded to briefly. But it's also, if you look at sources like Walmart, Luminate, I think the kind of shopper insights that we're being able to glean from there with a double opt-in panel, with the kind of you know, cohorts that have been tracked longitudinally, you're able to now start looking at preferences for products, and you're able to feed that into predicting and forecasting demand for products.
So the brain manufacturers are beginning to rely on or use shopper level insights and data in their forecasts and so on.
In their forecasts, and definitely in the on-shelf availability component, because that is directly applicable. But the goal is to kind of move that upstream even further into the forecasting. So that is where experiments are happening today.
Because a few minutes ago you mentioned, you know, the brands have real-time visibility to inventory, you know, across the supply chain. And many times I would certainly agree with that. It would seem like at a lot of retailers, though, once it goes into the retailer's distribution center and into the stores, it sort of goes into a black hole. You know, they see product going in, and then on the other side, they may see, you know, data from a Nielsen or a IRI or someone, you know, sales data coming out the other side. But what happens in between is this big mystery. And I know many CPG retailers are grappling with the idea of improving visibility to the shelf, improving ideally real-time visibility to inventory on shelf or back of store. Yeah, because it is becoming such a big issue relative to online shopping.
To be fair, some companies, I won't name them here, but some companies are trying to solve that problem, ourselves included for that matter, where we're looking at retail shelf data, but we're trying to also see if there are automated ways of data collection. Now, as a professional services firm, we'll come in once the data is already there, but there are other mechanisms for collecting shelf level or aisle level data and use that to construct graphs. But we do believe that the power of this is in building out that visibility view. It's not necessary. So let me back up a stage. For the longest time, the perception has been that the entity that owns the data is the king in terms of being able to deploy that, in terms of being able to derive insights from that. But with the buildup of data that is happening, I think the challenge today is being able to tap into that data and extract meaningful insights, actionable insights.
Yes.
And that is where, let's take one entirely different space for a second, which is ad tech. The volume of data, of viewership data from across mobiles, tablets, televisions, connected televisions, is immense. And when you try to build a knowledge graph based off of those data sets, many of the current graph database and graph ML solutions break down. It's not possible. And that is where, again, if we're able to kind of deploy or figure out a new way to build these graph networks, we are able to solve the problem of which product came from which warehouse, how it was fulfilled, and where it is likely to be. That is where I think, again, new ways of building graph networks become the unlock rather than the data about that, which is which is also a problem worth solving to kind of ingest that kind of data as well.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, we've talked a lot about CPG brand manufacturers. Do you do any work for retailers or on the retail side?
Certainly. We've worked with multiple retailers, including a large teleshopping network, including one of the largest convenience stores across the US. What we've helped them with is in terms of the problem that you described, which is how do you bring together diverse data sources in a way that you can still connect them and make sense of them. So for us, a lot of the value comes in being able to move some of this data into more of a data marketplace, like a Snowflake. And yeah, we've helped companies migrate from their legacy systems onto Snowflake and start using it from there.
Okay. Do you find in your work with retailers, do you find they are getting more value from a, let's say, a product-based, you know, view of the world or analytics versus a shopper-based view? Or is the strength really in the combination of the two?
I would actually be interested in how you're seeing that, Gary, and maybe I can react to that.
So, you know, historically, retail has been very product focused, right? In large part because that's all that retail could measure. I knew what products I was buying. I knew the cost, inventory, sales, etc. With the advent of loyalty programs over the last, 20, 25 years, some good number of retailers have a large amount of very accurate shopper data, in the sense of, which specific shopper is buying which specific products and being able to build that data over time. Some retailers, although in my opinion, relatively few, truly understand customer-based data and mm-hmm. are able to understand that and use that in how they go to market to grow sales, grow margins, et cetera. But I'm just curious from your viewpoint, if you are seeing retailers continue to focus primarily on a product view of the world, or if they are, tapping into more shopper data.
That's actually a great question, Gary. So if I think about it, what we are seeing in our conversations with retailers is loyalty and personalization are kind of going hand in hand. The interplay is also with financial services, to the extent that a lot of retailers are looking to marry their loyalty data with payments data to understand where the headroom is. So are there customers going out and shopping at other retail locations as well, and how they can capture some of that? Obviously, there is less visibility into the basket at competing retailers, but at least they know what kind of size, the frequency of visits, purchases, etc. So they can figure out very differentiated strategies for each segment of consumer. I don't think it's at a one-to-one level yet. We're still seeing use cases addressing segments or micro segments of customers or shoppers, but the trend is definitely moving in that direction. That is one view. I think the product-centric view is also interesting in the sense that quite often it is about looking at enthusiasts for a particular product and then figuring out if maybe a white label product can be pushed in as a substitute to that, or looking at that basket and figuring out what are the complementary products, and then offers can be rolled out around those as well, and measuring the incrementality around that.
Yeah.
So quite often the progress is on the sophistication of the personalization of the recommender engine. That is where, again, we are seeing a lot of movement from traditional models, which are, let's say, gradient boosted methods or XG boost or tree-based recommender systems, to more of transformer-based models, which are more deep learning and at the same time what they do is they do a multi-class classification. So it's not just recommend this or not. It's about recommending A or B or C or D. And when they do that, these models are now able to take in, so the relevance of that to the retail journey is you're able to take the view of the entire customer journey. Mm-hmm. Customer talked for the first time 6 months ago with us. They received an offer in their email. They did not react to that. They received an offer on the phone. They came in and shopped again. Their basket size went up from A to B. The number of products went up or went down or however. Now I'm able to take this entire journey and optimize my messaging for conversion right at the end. Again, the way these models have become more effective is to start moving to different GPU architectures and then apply more complex transformer-based models, which are able to factor in time-based variables as well. And that is allowing them to kind of drive improvements in the model where it's almost about 35% improvement in the recommendation in terms of the power to convert.
Yeah, wow. Well, I know, certainly AI is helping power a shift in relative to marketing and personalization, right? AI is helping power a shift to true one-to-one or true individualized marketing, and away from segmentations or even micro segments, right? Truly getting to that individual sharper level. What are you seeing in this whole space around business process automation? Are you encountering any of that, or do you see any of that, see any growth in that?
So there's definitely potential here. I think on the AI side, it's about accelerating things which require one to take a call. The first part that has come into the picture is contact center, for sure. And that's where generative AI or chatbots are playing a major role in offering up recommendations to contact center agents. I would say the second part of it is in terms of automating, I don't think we're seeing a lot of action on the CPG or retail side yet, except in parts of the supply chain. So if it's about a reorder trigger to be placed, that's happening. But a lot of this is contingent on being able to ingest the real-time aisle data to be able to figure out what is out going out of stock or what on-shelf availability needs to be ensured.
Yes.
So that is where we are playing a big role in being able to ingest some of the much more recent data and project recommendations back. We haven't automated that part yet because we believe a human in the loop is kind of essential to make sure that we have some level of control over it.
That makes sense. So looking ahead, Shiraz, what do you see in this space looking out over the next couple of years? Certainly continued growth and application of generative AI. I think more general AI is at least on the horizon right now. But what do you see ahead?
So I'll take just one area, right? If I just think about personalization, that in itself is a lever that has been used, but its true value will only now be unlocked because a lot of it depends on how good the model is. And that model is going to become a whole lot better because of the massive amounts of compute that are power that is now being unlocked. And that is going to show up the early adopters and the first movers who are going to realize a whole lot of success and quickly build competitive advantage. So I think from a personalization perspective, certain retailers are going to get a whole lot better in terms of the recommendations they're making and therefore forge a much stronger bond with their loyalty customers. That is going to be one. The second is in terms of the fulfillment, where companies are going to be, some of them are going to be able to forecast their demand and fulfill that demand in a much better way. And then the third is we're definitely going to see, so if I think about product innovation successes, historically about 85 to 90% of products that are launched in a given year is failed. And right. That is a huge value dent to all manufacturers. And that is going to get a whole lot better as we look at the next, maybe not 12 months, but 24 months for sure, we're going to start seeing a lot more innovation successes. So reducing that from 85, 90% to about 60% failure rate or 50% failure rate is going to have a tremendous impact in terms of successes for certain CPGs.
Yeah, well, and I would say even more than benefit for CPGs, it's going to benefit the retailers, right? You know, there's so many costs that cascade from that new product, having to get into the distribution center, get onto the shelf in the store, and so on. You know, if you're able to improve the success rate of that, it reduces costs for everybody. So, you know, completely agree with what you were saying. I think it was Tom Davenport. Are you familiar with some of his writing and works?
Yes.
You know, I've read a number of his books and articles. And one of the things I keep coming back to that he said, and this is going back, I think, a couple of years now, is that, you know, leading companies that truly understand AI, machine learning, and begin applying it are going to open up a growing performance gap versus followers, right? The slower movers. And I think that becomes especially true as we keep moving up that exponential growth curve of processing power of data, of AI, and so on, the world we live in today.
Absolutely. And the only thing I would add to that is I think no one could have foreseen the impact that this kind of generative AI and the accelerated compute age could have provided. But I don't think a whole lot of companies have still realized that. And as AMD and some of the others catch up and start releasing this capacity to Azure and AWS and GCP, I think some retailers, some CPGs will suddenly wake up and say, hey, how is my competitor doing so much better all of a sudden? And that is where I think the by then, though, it will be too late to jump on board. It will happen, but that will open up that gap that Tom has mentioned.
Yeah. So agree. Shiraz, this has been great talking with you today. Really appreciate your insights and comments here. If any of our listeners want to reach out to you, what's the best way to contact you?
I'm available on LinkedIn as Shiraz Ritwik. We are on the internet, www.latentview.com. And of course, happy to kind of, you know, if you write in to me, I'll be happy to respond, shiraz.rithwick@latentview.com.
All right, perfect. So thank you again for being with us here today. And if you would stay on just a moment.
Sure.
I want to thank everyone for listening in today and look forward to being with you again soon with my co-host, Shekhar Raman. Thank you now.
Thank you for having me.